Welcome to Confessions of a DPO. I'm your host, Olga Nielsen, and I'm so glad that you could join us today. My guest is from UK, Ben, and he is a DPO, actually an award nominee and award-winning DPO. And it's such a great pleasure to have Ben with us today. Thank you so much for being here. Tell us about yourself and why you chose to be a DPO.
Well, I probably should clarify. Award-winning, maybe people will think that's an award-winning DPO. I was award-winning head of compliance. My role is head of compliance and the DPO.
Okay.
And 2 years ago, I was successful in being named the Compliance Officer of the Year award. So it wasn't actually data protection that I won the award in, but I'll take
still
it.
There. He's still there. It's still important. Still important.
So what led me to be a DPO is, you could describe it as a bit of a non-standard journey into data protection, but then most people have the similar sort of experience. It's not, or it wasn't pre-GDPR, the type of role that people aspired to go into, like leaving school. I was working in a call center in a financial services organization, and I was able to successfully get promoted into a tech support team, but it was more regulatory compliance support.
Yes.
And I worked there for 5 years, and we did data protection stuff in as far as we did desk audit. So we would go around the office after hours and see if anyone's left any confidential information, and we'd tell them off if they did that. And we also would interpret group policy and implement it in our business unit, like authentication processes and those sorts of things. So I got an interest in it. And in 2012, a job came up internally in the data protection team, and I applied for it.
Yeah,
I was one of 14 applicants, but I was the only internal applicant, interestingly. And I think it was before data protection was cool, although I say that and people laugh in my face who aren't in doing data protection, because they say data protection is still isn't cool. So, but I think it's cool.
I think so too.
Cool. But it was definitely before it was a well-established sort of career path. And I was successful. Well, actually, interesting story. For the final interview in 2012, I was asked on a Friday or a Thursday afternoon to present on the Monday for this final round of the interview on this new thing called the GDPR. And I knew that was a test of how much of my weekend I was willing to commit to preparing for this interview. And I spent the whole weekend researching this thing called the GDPR. And during that weekend, that was the epiphany moment where I learned about data protection officers, and I was like, oh my God, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. And I remember telling my wife, this is great, I'm going to be a data protection officer. And I remember her laughing at me going, that's silly, no one wants to do that. So I went to this interview, and I presented on the top five operational impacts for the organization on the text as it stood then. And yes, was successful in that job, in the application for that role. I wasn't a DPO at that point.
Okay.
But I spent 3 years working in that team, getting experience, getting qualifications, and reached that point where I wanted to be a DPO and I felt ready. And the DPO who was there at the time said to me, you're going to have to leave because I'm never leaving. And they're still there to this day.
Okay.
So that's it's been 12 years. No, it's been about 10 years. So they're still there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I left to take on my first ever DPO role in a health insurance company. And yeah, that was the start of my journey.
What was about the DPO role that you said, okay, I want to be a DPO? Why? What was it?
It brought together a number of different skill sets. It was working very closely with the business. It was managing risk. I know at the time I didn't understand I was managing risk, but it was working with data and it was working with technology. Things I'm very passionate about, and I discovered I've been passionate about. And it was fast paced, it was high pressure, and it was just exciting. And dealing with fixing issues and solving very complicated, sometimes broad, wide ranging problems.
Yes,
is something I really enjoy doing. So I do really enjoy a really technical, challenging problem, and unpicking it and breaking it into parts and trying to resolve it. So that I realized, well, I was going to get that, and I was going to get a lot of that in this role.
Yeah, so I hear you, and definitely the newcomers, they need to understand that you need to be passionate about this field if you want to survive, because challenges are there everywhere. So you mentioned that you have another role as well, not only the DPO. So how do you manage that? And of course, thinking of the conflict of interest, also the challenges, or some of the findings, right, in the report from the European Data Protection Board, the conflict of interest was one of the findings. So how do you manage that?
Yeah, there's some clear and very well-known roles that you can't combine with DPO. I think there's an argument that head of compliance might not be one of them, although I believe there was regulatory enforcement in Europe, and I forget which country, for a person that had a combination of roles which included head of compliance and DPO. We've undertaken the conflict of interest assessment. We've got a process in place if that conflict was to arise, and that, you know, around information being processed, that I'm determining the means and the purpose in the compliance space, and my role as DPO. I have an individual that deputizes for me on a regular basis on a number of key issues that would step into that position and make those decisions if that conflict ever arose.
Do you think it's difficult for the business to figure out when you're a DPO and when you are a head of compliance? And how did you manage for the business to understand that, well, you have different roles?
No, I don't think so. Although it's not something I've encountered. The two teams work very closely together. Okay. I'd say we're probably going to become known as the compliance function, although that's up for debate. Data protection is to some extent a compliance, activity. So I don't see there being that confusion in the business, predominantly given the scope of data protection in my organization. I speak mainly about data protection when I'm talking with stakeholders, although compliance is becoming more well known, and I'm doing a lot to raise awareness around the compliance work that we do. There hasn't been any confusion.
That's really
the
good
go-to for compliance based things that can include data protection. It can include sanctions. It can include, financial crime or fraud.
Yeah, that's really, really good. Some of the DPOs out there, they are struggling with that. Even, of course, if they have a different role, and sometimes, the business has some sort of expectations of you as a DPO. How do you manage that? Do you have any requests directly from the business? You need to help me with that because you're the DPO, and then you say, oh, well, I am the DPO, but actually it's not my task.
There's always been a conflict, and I don't know if conflict's probably a strong word. There's always been a bit of a misunderstanding between the three lines of defense model, and I don't know if the listeners will understand that, but I highly recommend. And it's I guess you could say three lines of defense is very well known in the financial services sector. Outside of that, you might not be that familiar with it. And compliance, the data protection team, will often sit in the second line of defense with the business in the first line. There's a blurring of lines in every organization I've ever worked with. And there's been it's got some aspect of data protection, therefore surely you're responsible for it, you're accountable for it, and whatever's going on, you'll just deal with that. And that's an education piece, raising awareness. And often it's transitioning processes back into the business that have wrongly been assigned to the data protection team because, hey, it's got some aspect of data protection, surely you should own it.
Yes.
Every organization I've been in has been different in terms of what the expectation has been, what we own, what we do. There's often a negotiation with the business in terms of, actually, I'm doing this thing for you today. I'm going to give you the tools, and I'm going to give you the process, and I'm going to but this isn't a data protection process. It should be owned by the business.
Yes.
There are aspects today, most certainly, that we are doing first line work for the business that I want to, in the new year, start to transition back. I think some examples would be data protection impact assessments. We have a lot of involvement in that.
Yes. Yes.
And making sure the ROPA is refreshed and updated, and any new processing is covered by the ROPA. We are very heavily involved, and that's an education piece typically, because if we give them a blank template, they fill this in. Chances are we won't get very good quality output from the business. So we sit with them on a call and we say, we're going to work through this, and we've actually partially done it for you because we want you to learn how to do this, learn the level or the quality that we're looking for.
Yeah.
And hopefully over time we can start to say, now you've done enough of these.
Yes.
You don't need so much support. We don't need us in the room. We can start to just give them to you and we'll expect a certain quality back.
Ben, do you think a tool might help in this case?
Yeah, the tools.
I don't know if you use one now, but I've
used tools in every organization I've been in. There are some that are very manual. There are some that you could argue create more work than they actually resolve or create more effort than they remove. I think if you're trying to build a framework that is repeatable, measurable, then a tool is going to be massively helpful. It's going to help you to report. It's going to help to generate metrics. It's going to help in terms of automation of tasks. And tasks is one of the biggest challenges. If you're doing a data protection impact assessment and you've found a number of risk-based tasks that you want the business to achieve following the review, and you say, right, we're signing this off on the proviso that these get done in a certain time frame which you agree with the business. If it's in a Word document, who's going to go in periodically and say, have you done this yet? Have you done this yet? I mean, you could put it in a spreadsheet, but still it's all manual, and the chances are we're very busy, they're very busy.
Exactly.
A year later, and those risks haven't been mitigated. If it's in a tool set, it's automatically emailing people, you're getting a dashboard, you're being able to, have those conversations to say, this is still outstanding, it's turned red, I'm going to be reporting it at the whatever forum that we have for compliance, that you haven't done what you said you'd do.
Yes.
When we sign this thing off. So tool can be massively helpful in that space, but it's a big setup cost and time to get those things working for you rather than against you.
That's true. That's really, really true. But also when they do work, then it's really great also for the DPO to have
the
dashboard.
Both. I've seen absolutely, perfectly calibrated, enhanced and optimized implementations of tools that take so much pain away and just make your life much easier. And then I've seen the same tool, exactly the same tool, not set up properly, making life really painful. The business are frustrated with it. They're switched off. They don't want to engage with it. So it's actually being detrimental to your compliance program to have the tool. And this is the same tool I've seen. It's all in the amount of time and effort you put in the setup.
I hope you remember how it was when you first thought, okay, I want to be a DPO. And if someone told you at that time, you need to be aware of when you are a DPO, this is what you get. It's nothing you can read from a book. It's not the certification. It's nothing else. But so what would you say to a newcomer in this field, a DPO role?
I say two things you need to be: pragmatic and resilient. The things that over and over again, you'll be dealing with multitude of problems on a daily basis. You'll need to sometimes understand that you can't fix that problem today, and banging your head against a brick wall to try and get engagement from the business on a certain issue is not going to, you're not going to win, and you need to be pragmatic over what you can achieve, what you can risk accept for the time being if that's necessary. Resilient, and it's not an easy job. I mean,
no,
I've yet to find a DPO who's told me they've got a great life. Not a great life. They have a great life. They've got a very easy job. Because then, and we don't go into it for an easy job. We go into it because I want to be tested.
Exactly.
And I want to be challenged, and I want to have really challenging problems that I get to solve. So yeah, resilience and being pragmatic, I think is the two things that you'll come across. And you have to be an absolutely incredible communicator. You have to be able to communicate and win over your stakeholders and know that not all of them are going to be on your side. And I say this quite a lot, is we're selling something no one wants to buy.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true.
I'm going into the room, I'm going to sell you something, and I know fundamentally you do not want to buy what I'm here to sell. It doesn't make you any money.
No.
It's actually a cost center. Yeah. Is what you view me as a cost center, but and a time suck. And so it's really explaining why it's good business practice to buy into what you're selling. That's a really challenging skill set.
Yes.
I would say going in and saying, oh, we'll get fined 4%, whatever. You're never going to win anyone over with that. You need to be sensible about what are the benefits of having a good compliance program with the right controls, procedures, policies, training, education, all that good stuff. It's a very challenging skill.
And it comes
over time. And I would say I've had many times where I've not been successful because I've gone in and tried to sell something to someone who wasn't buying that day. But you recognize you've got to come back another day. Maybe you're with a different pitch.
Exactly. And maybe also a different stakeholder. And maybe that stakeholder will approach the other one who said no. So in that sense, somehow.
Well, that's when you talk about senior sponsorship. It's critical to have someone in the senior exec team that sponsors what you do and is there to support it and champion it. And sometimes, because I'm not at that level, I'm not going to break through the noise of what that person's dealing with.
Mm.
And it takes, the senior stakeholder, the sponsor, to have those conversations and say, this is super important. You've got to have someone championing you. I've worked in organizations where there hasn't been that tone from the top. And you will become very frustrated very quickly.
Yes.
If the senior leadership aren't supporting what you're doing.
How do you deal with that, the frustrations?
Yeah, like I said, you've got to sometimes, after an interaction, lick your wounds, go away and re-strategize. Where did I go wrong? What was it that I said or did? Did I not prepare properly? Did I not have the right information? It takes time.
It definitely takes time.
You need to seriously think about your career in an organization if they're fundamentally opposed to doing compliance properly.
Yes.
I get there's a balance and there's a risk, and we work, we operate in an environment where we have to make risk-informed decisions. But some organizations, and I've been there, they're just not gonna get on board, and that is a very frustrating place to be.
Yeah, that's true. And it's up for...
I'd like to say, for the record, where I am today is 100%. The tone from the top is amazing. My boss is brilliant. And, I quite often sit down next to the CEO. He sits in the office with us. He talks about risk and compliance. It's such a refreshing place to be in terms of how much they get it and how important it is to the organization to do this stuff and to do it right. So... yeah, I'm very lucky. I recognize that, having worked in organizations that weren't quite in that place, you over time recognize that's a great place to be.
That's true. And then I guess one needs to go through some experiences before finding out, okay, but this is actually quite good, especially when you have the senior management on board, on your side for once. So that's really, really good. So if you should pick one of the tasks, DPO tasks, that what do you think is the most challenging? And which one is the most fun and rewarded?
Can we do the fun one first?
Yeah, let's do that.
I mean, I guess it's a matter of preference. I love educating employees. I love doing the awareness stuff. I like, you know, doing sort of events and the, you know, we do breakfast briefings, lunch and learns. We did privacy pub quiz last year where we got as many people from the organization to come and do a pub quiz style sort of event. And just sitting in a room and talking to people, I get a lot of energy from it. So I really enjoy that aspect. And I don't get to do it that often because, you know, I'm quite busy doing the more senior strategy stuff.
Yes.
So my team are doing a lot of the in-person training, but sometimes if I get the opportunity, I'll drop in and participate to the extent I can on the in-person training. We've recognized, and I think most organizations will have some e-learning, right? So you've got your annual e-learning. And I remember someone's describing how people approach e-learning in a business, and they said, well, if you think about it, they brute force the e-learning and they get through as fast as they can.
Yes.
And that's a good way of looking at e-learning. You've ticked a box. You put something out there. Chances are most of the organization didn't read it. They skimmed it as quickly as they could.
Yes.
So what are you actually going to do to train and educate your employees? So we took that challenge and we looked at it this year, and we've started to do tailored and targeted in-person training. Now, you can't do in-person training for the whole company, right?
Yes.
You just haven't got the manpower to do that. And we're quite a small organization, but we still can't get everyone in the classroom. So we took a risk-based approach and said, well, what areas do we think need our help the most? What areas have the biggest risk or exposure for data protection? And they're the areas. So every quarter we do a different team, and we work with the management in that team. We say, where are you concerned? What do you think we need to talk about? Let's look at processes. So we go into the room with the people that need the training the most, with absolutely tailored and targeted training about their day-to-day jobs.
Yes.
And really helping them understand how data protection impacts their day-to-day. That has been, you know, I'd say transformative in organization. So that's been a really great way of looking at training.
Yes.
And we're actually switching from an annual e-learning. We just kicked it off. We broke it into parts and we're drip feeding it through the year. So next year it will be modules, about 10-15 minutes per module.
Okay.
Every 2 or 3 months we're going to drop a module in. So because you look at e-learning, if that's all you're doing, so someone gets some training, do they read it, do they not? You don't know. And then what? There's a 11 months and 4.5 weeks of nothing.
Exactly.
And then they go, oh, yeah, there's that data protection thing again. Oh, I should probably worry about that. And then I've forgotten it already. So we're going with this new modular approach this year and into the next year, which we're hoping will keep it top of mind, as well as the targeted in-person training. It's a lot. It's a huge amount of work.
Yes, it is.
We went into it, you know, with our eyes wide open. We knew this was going to be challenging from a resource perspective, but it was worth doing. And it already, we're getting a lot of positive feedback from the business.
I definitely relate to that. But I think the results of it are really, really great. I think the business appreciates that much more, at least in my experience, when they see that it's not just the e-learning, you really put your sweat and tears into
and you get to share your passion, right?
Exactly.
And when you're passionate about something, that is infectious. People pick up on your passion and they start to go, okay, this is something I might actually show a bit of interest in or like actually focus some time on. And that's what we've been doing, is just, you know, sharing our passion with this subject across the business, which has been great. So more of that next year. Recognizing it's a lot of work, but totally worth doing. You can ask me what my least favorite thing is now, aren't you?
Yeah, of course.
God, which one would I say? I think there's aspects of data protection which are very sort of manual, process orientated, form filling. And like you could argue Roper is one of those things. And that's where I think, you know, if you're working from a spreadsheet or a Word document, It's hugely painful. And I guess my least favorite thing, it's not just a specific requirement. It's having a framework or a program that isn't optimized, that involves a ton of manual time, a ton of manual effort to maintain anything meaningful. And I've found that in various degrees in every business I've been in. So it's about having all of these regulatory requirements and not having some at least tool or process or something that can simplify the sheer volume of administration that comes with it. We have actually this year created a new job in our team called the data protection administrator. So it's a gateway for people who have no data protection experience. So we're like, you want to do a job to data protection, but you don't know how to get into it. Well, here it is. This is the job. We say, come and work for us. No data protection experience is required.
Okay, you'll come that's into
the,
cool.
You come into the team. You take a junior role. It's admin, right?
Yes,
here's the admin that the team are professionals with years of experience doing all of this really important work. A lot of the work that we get stuck and bogged down is admin that you don't need to be an expert in. With a little bit of training, you can do the team admin. So we've had some really amazing people come through that process now.
Yeah.
And yes, it's not much fun at first. It's a ton of admin. It's managing the team's calendar. It's managing some of the team event. It's dealing with some of the data entry stuff that we get bogged down in. You know, managing like taking the notes or doing actions, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we're making sure there's an education pathway. You're sitting with the experts. You're learning from them. We have that person triaging all sort of data incidents and events. So as soon as anything gets reported, they're the first to read it. We say, give us your assessment, high, medium, or low impact. What do you think? And then they run it past the team. And then we say, well, what do you think we should do? Should we do X? And so they're sort of learning by doing.
That's really great.
It's been really successful because it's freed the team up to get on with the work that they should be getting on with.
Yes.
And it gives people this entry into data protection that they ordinarily would never have had. So people, they come from the call centers, from the back office admin teams, wanting to get into this industry. And this is the gateway that we've given them.
That's really, really good. If we move to, let's say, I know there is no typical day, but let's say a Monday morning and not Friday afternoon, because Friday afternoon everybody is afraid of. I hope that I'm getting home today. And there is no data breach, but anyway, let's say a Monday morning or a Tuesday morning getting to work. What will your typical day be like as DPO?
It tends to be quite a lot of meetings, talking about situations, talking about some of the projects that we're working on. I'm a stickler for having a weekly one-to-one with my team, to just hear what they're working on, answer any questions, make sure me as a DPO, I'm not slowing them down in terms of any decision-making capability. So I have several one-to-ones that I do on a Monday. I do a lot of reporting. It's super important to produce meaningful reports to the senior leadership.
How many reports do you deliver to your senior?
there's a number of forums that data protection feeds into, the audit and risk committee being one. There's a data protection management committee that we stood up in 2023, been really successful in moving the sort of the dial, so to speak, on data protection programs and issues and just making decisions, which, without appropriate governance, you're going to be really challenged. You're really challenged to get budget, really challenged to get decisions made. And sometimes without decision, you're stuck in limbo. So we've created these forums and I produce a dashboard. So I inherited what I'd say was not a great dashboard in 2023. It had trend analysis for 2 months.
Okay.
So it would show a certain situation this month and a certain situation last month. And it would then show you the percentage change between situations. Mm. So if you had, small number, but you know, small, quite a large change. You're saying there's been a 200% increase in data breaches.
No.
Oh, there's been one extra breach.
Okay.
Right? That's how silly the metrics were. I was like, no, you need 12 months rolling. Mm-hmm. We want trend analysis. So we had to get a lot of data that hadn't been collated properly and build out this report and actually start producing something meaningful to the senior execs on trend analysis, which has been hugely valuable, because as soon as you look at the 12 months, you can say, oh, okay, we're starting to get, you know, exponentially more of these. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Let's dig into the root cause. Let's see if we can actually address this issue. And that we found has been great. So yes, we do audit and risk committee. There's a pack that goes to the board and the executive committee. They have consolidated that. So it was 2 data protection management committee. So there's 4, but they were all different reports. I said, I'm only doing one. And this is the one you'll get. And it will be everything that the others were and or weren't quite. So I gave them a much better dashboard. I should probably say I started my career very early on in that tech support team, creating and producing the monthly risk and compliance pack. And so I've got a lot of experience in producing metrics and meaningful information to senior execs. And so I've carried that through. It's one of the skill sets that's been super helpful with me is reporting and metrics, because if you're buried under a ton of work, going to a senior lead and going, I'm buried under a ton of work, that's a bit of a pointless thing to say. If you can go, here is all the work we've been doing, and here you can see it doubled, tripled, whatever, in the last 3 months on a graph, of course they're going to go, okay, yeah, I can see that. Let's talk about resourcing.
Yeah, exactly.
So we do a lot of reporting, and the interestingly, the data protection administrator, I've trained her, because my reporting is all through a Ray formula, which I learned years and years ago and is like a dark art these days. Everyone uses Power BI.
Yes.
But I still build my stuff using a Ray formula. So I know I should learn Power BI, and I've been trying to learn it for a while. But so I created this monster of a report, which no one knew how to do. And I was having to do it every month. And then we create this new job, and I trained the person. And every month, several hours of my day, if not maybe half a whole day, I would be reporting. She's just producing the perfect report for me, which is amazing. So that's the power of the data protection administrator. She produces the monthly dashboard every month. So
remember that the data protection administrator.
They aren't trained people, so you know they don't come with the kind of salary demands of a seasoned data protection professional, and you know, while you're offering them, we're going to give you access to professional qualifications. Where I am, we have a budget for professional training, and each year I set my team. I said, "What's your personal development goal for the year? You must have one." Yes. And my preference is it's a professional qualification. So this year I've had one of the team members just pass their CIPPE. Okay. Another one's done their CIPM. No, in fact, we've had 2 people do CIPM this year. One's done CIPPE. Someone else is doing the legal qualification that they were already doing when they joined. And someone else is doing something else. Everyone I try and encourage to work on a professional qualification.
Yes.
The reason for that is when I was in that tech support team many years ago, my career started to flounder a bit and I was sort of going nowhere. And my manager said, I'm going to make you do a professional qualification every year. And I was very angry and upset because I didn't want to do that. And I thought, why should I have to give up my personal time for this stuff? And so I did it, and I did, and I passed. And I thought, actually, it was quite interesting. And then I did another one and I passed, and I did another one and I passed. And when I left that team, I thought, I'll just carry that on. And I've done a professional qualification every year since 2008. I did take 1 year off.
Yeah.
And that was 2018. But, you know, GDPR was coming to force, quite a busy year. So I didn't do one that year. But some of the years I've done 3. I did 3 in 2016, which is the CIPPE, CIPM, and the CISSP.
Okay.
And I think you've got to have that growth mindset. You've got to have focus on your personal development. It supercharged my career, I would say, just even having the mindset of I'm going to learn, I'm going to grow. This is a really challenging industry because it moves so fast and things change rapidly.
Yeah.
And you've got to continually keep yourself updated with all these things. I mean, I've run out of data protection qualifications. I won't lie. I've done sanctions qualifications. I just did a diploma in ESG at the beginning of this year. And I'm doing the AI governance one at the moment, as you know. So if anyone's out there and they're just starting out, I would say utilize the funds, the budget, the training and development budget in your organization to do professional qualifications.
Yes.
It will benefit your career massively, and it will benefit you with that mindset.
Definitely, definitely. So we've been around the training that you, how you train the business and your own training, because of course it's a requirement as a DPO.
Yep.
But what can you tell us about some, you know, one of the best awareness campaign that you've done or you've been a part of?
Well, I think, I know, we've already talked about breakfast briefings and lunch and learns. Mm-hmm. What I'll give you a situation that I encountered. I think you can hear about and read about, you know, training and education and awareness campaigns online, and but there's going to be times where you cannot get access to staff for whatever reason, and you've got to think outside the box. And I had that situation at a large global tech firm that I worked for. We wanted to educate the call center. They had a big call center in Dublin, and I was there, and they just couldn't get the people off the phones to sit in a room and listen to me talk about GDPR. And so we're a bit flummoxed on how we can get in front of these people. And so what we did is we set up a stall in the atrium of the building, and we got a popcorn machine.
Okay.
And we started cooking popcorn, and soon the whole office was smelling a popcorn.
Oh my god, I can just smell the popcorn.
Where's the popcorn? And so we had for the whole day, I think we had 2 days in fact, just a queue of people coming to us. And we had all this swag and all this merch, and they were coming, and we had like some printouts of the new policies and like just information resources. And so they just queued up and to get popcorn.
Okay.
You just had to talk to us about data protection. We'll just tell you what's coming. There's new processes. There's a new learning hub. It was just raising awareness that things were changing because of GDPR.
Yes.
I do remember one person getting to the end of the queue and saying, "How much is the popcorn?" to me. And I said, "Well, all it is you have to just listen to me talk about GDPR." And I remember his response was, "That's too expensive."
Wow. Well,
but that was a way we didn't do the classroom education, but we reached and everyone was talking about it. The GDPR popcorn people was kind of what we got known as. And every time I returned there, I was known as popcorn guy, not GDPR guy. But it raised awareness. It got people talking about data protection. They got to eat popcorn, and it just people were thinking about it and knew something was happening and knew where to go for more resources. So we got around it by thinking slightly differently than trying to argue with senior leaders to take people off calls that was going to be a problem for the business.
Yes. So get creative. That's the key.
Yeah.
To get people's attention.
If you're working in a call center environment or environment that is, time pressure in terms of doing work, it's a big ask to take people out of that and sit them in a room and talk about compliance and data protection, because that's going to impact the KPIs of the business. So think differently about how you approach that situation. It's a negotiation with the business, and on that time I had to agree with them, I can't pull your whole call center offline for a period of time, because that will really impact customers, impact the business. So we did something different.
And we know that DPO job is, pretty much, and for many DPOs out there, it's, quite lonely being a DPO, especially if you don't, you're not part of a team. Some DPOs are still by themselves out there. So what about you? Do you have somebody? You can't be on call 24/7. So do you have some support line somewhere you can...
I remember early on, so I've I have experienced that. I've been the one-man band, as we call it. You know, you're a DPO, team of one. That's really challenging. It's really tough.
Yes.
It's difficult to achieve anything without resources or a team or people doing stuff for you. And it can be very lonely. And when I first started out, I'd say, you know, was I ready to be a DPO? I guess I was successful, but it wasn't easy. I leaned very heavily on my network. And I think network is crucial. I think building a strong network of like-minded people in the same or similar roles, and that's through going to events. There's lots of different industry groups, networks where you can go and meet people. I was the co-chair of the Data Protection Finance Group for 3 years. That hugely changed my professional career. As I joined I joined in 2012 when I first got my data protection job, and the DPO said, "I'm too busy to go to this. Can you go and represent the business?" So I started going there in 2012 and was, you know, privileged enough to be invited to be the co-chair in 2019. And I've met so many amazing people, and I've made so many lasting connections. And there's been times where I've thought, I really don't know about this one, and I'm really on the fence. And I've read the books and I've done the research, and I'm still thinking, there's got to be someone who's seen this before and seen how it's played out. Sometimes you think there's multiple options. And so picking up the phone and saying, "Hey, you got 5 minutes. I appreciate your perspective." I did in the early days. I mean, after a period of time, you start to trust your judgment. But if you're new, I think you need to start going to these events. The IAPP put them on, KnowledgeNet, I think they do. But outside of that, there's plenty of other forums and networks you can join and start to build and grow your network. And you can do that on LinkedIn as well. But of course, nothing beats face-to-face meeting people. So I'd say that is one thing. Well, the main thing you can do if you're a one man band and you're struggling and you need support. I'd say mentoring is also really good. I've mentored people for a number of years. I have a mentor now. I've had mentors infrequently throughout my career, and I've got a really great mentor now, which they're not even in data protection, but more from a sort of leadership, you know, perspective. But I mentor a couple of people in data protection. Well, actually, one of them is financial crime now. But I just help answer their questions. I mean, I'm not answering like technical data protection issues, but more on the sort of, this is a complex situation I'm dealing with in terms of stakeholder management, interpersonal relationships with, you know, different individuals in my team, tasks I've been asked to do, you know, processes I need to follow, or I need to get budget, or I need to get a decision made. And I've found I just hit the brick wall, and I'll help sort of share my experience. So I think finding a good mentor and reaching out and becoming members of a network is going to be hugely beneficial.
Yes. And do you see yourself continuing working as a DPO?
Yes. Interesting. I did step outside of data protection for a period of time in 2020 when I was went full time compliant. So I was working for an FCA regulated entity that needed a compliance officer, and it was just too much to do data protection as well. And so I stepped away from that for a period of time. I did miss it. I missed it a lot. I'd say in 2020 when I took on this new role, I went from being quite comfortable, and I don't like the word expert when you apply it to yourself, but you are in the room because you have a very good understanding of data protection and you're pretty comfortable with most scenarios that come up. And I went from that sort of level of understanding to zero, and I was working in a benchmark administrator, you know, that dealing with a benchmark regulation, never seen or read it before. And it's just, I needed to focus all my time and attention upskilling on the benchmark regulation, the market abuse regulation, the IOSCO principles. There's a whole range of stuff I had to learn, and I had to learn very quickly because we were in a challenging place. So I took some time out from data protection, and I did miss it. I did miss the cut and thrust, so to speak. I built up a very strong network of, you know, people that I, you know, stay in touch with, and it was good to get the opportunity to return in 2023. And it's amazing how quickly things have changed, how much.
Yes, that's true.
I thought I could just come back into this and it would, but no, there was a whole range of things I needed to spend time reading up on, get familiar with. You know, it'd been less than 3 years.
Yeah.
But yes, that was a very long-winded way of saying, yes, I definitely will continue in this role for the foreseeable. I really enjoy it. It's an exciting place to be. I've got to travel the world through data protection, which is amazing. I never thought I'd have that kind of opportunity. Hmm. And I started speaking at conferences in 2017, terrified of public speaking, absolutely terrified of it. And I've over time become more comfortable, still terrified when I go on stage. But I've spoken at conferences all across Europe. I've had all these amazing experiences just through at that point in time going, this is what I want to do. I'm going to fully invest in this as a career.
Amazing. And one last question now from the previous DPO from Finland.
Yeah.
So do you have a book, How to Be a Better DPO, that you could recommend?
It's an interesting question. And the first book that always comes to mind is a book by an author called Peter Carey, and I think it's called Practical Data Protection. I don't have the latest edition, that because I gave it to my mentee when I bought it. The reason for that is when I joined Data Protection in 2012, the DPO said, everyone in my team has this book on, this is what I expect. Everyone has the latest edition. And so whenever we were dealing with a technical issue and we're all like going, well, what should we do? Or how do we manage this? There'd be a point where someone would go, let's ask Peter. And we'd all get the book out and we'd all go through it and find and we go, oh, okay, Peter. And it just, over time, I've always kept up to date with Peter's book. He ran a company called PDP Training, and I got my first sort of data protection qualifications through PDP before IAPP was really a thing. And you know, I was trained by some amazing people, Eduardo Ostran, I think he's Hogan Lovells was one of the trainers. And at the time, you just don't realize how amazing these people are and how privileged you are to be sitting in a room with them for a day to be trained. And so I would always say if you're in the UK, because it's very UK centric, that would be the book I'd recommend. Only because of the history I have with that book.
And do you have a question for the next DPO?
I'd like to hear what books they're reading, because I read a lot of books. But aside from that, if we can keep that question, I would say, what is the biggest challenge facing you or your team?
That's an interesting question. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for sharing. It was very, very inspiring. And until next time, keep listening and keep helping me grow this podcast so we can have more confessions and more focus on this role. Until next time, I wish you all the best and stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you.